Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Qadira Aisha Muhammad for Blog Talk Radio, Religion Means Alive. Today's date is September the 10th, 2015. Today's topic is in regards to abuse of prescription pills. And I'm specifically speaking on African-Americans. First, before, you know, I get into the topic, I just want to let everyone know if you want to call in and you have questions or you want to speak with me directly, you can call in at 805-727-7013 and press 1, and you will be put through. First, just want to thank Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, for allowing me to be alive today to present this show and to have gathered the facts pertaining to this particular issue. If I say anything in error, I ask that Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, forgive me for misrepresenting or misstating anything that I state. Another thing that I wanted to speak on is When I choose these topics or when I'm interviewing a person for a particular topic, this is someone that I know or I have interacted with through social media, through knowing them, you know, from school, from work, or various different outlets. This is how I've, you know, come in contact with this person. Also, with the topics that I choose for my show that I do on Thursdays, Saturdays, and Mondays, these topics are something that I am witnessing myself in my particular environment. It does not necessarily mean that what's going on in your environment is different from my environment. And that could be possibly true. But the topics that I choose, these are some of the things that I think need to be addressed and spoken on. You know, different things happen in different areas. If you live in a rural area, it's going to be different from living in an urban area. Or, you know, it's just different from state to state, city to city, county to county. I live in Delaware County, which is right outside of Philadelphia, and some of the things that go on in my county is completely different from Philadelphia. We don't have the same mayor. We don't have the same laws. It's a host of different things that go on within different environments. You know, some things that I may see, witness that my children may have experienced or I may have experienced, but someone in Philadelphia or someone in Montgomery County may not have experienced those same things. So, you know, this is why I'm choosing to speak on these particular topics. Another thing, you know, people tend to state, and I've been approached with this, that I'm biased, and a lot of people have come to my defense to say, you know, Qadira, you're far from biased. Like, if I present something, I'm not just going to, you know, attack one side of it. I'm going to do both sides. So if I'm speaking on the issue of polygyny, like I did the show on polygyny, I spoke on, you know, what the women need to do, and I spoke on what the men need to do. I didn't choose a side and just attack the one side or be biased towards, you know, one side over the other. I gave both a 50-50 projection of what happens in polygyny on both sides. So I try to be fair as much as I can. And, you know, that's my whole purpose, is to try to be fair and accurate with the information that I'm providing you. If there is something that, you know, you want me to understand, and if you want to, you know, bring something to my attention, you have a topic that you want to speak on, it's a issue that's plaguing your environment, I have absolutely no problem at all addressing that. Like, if you feel as though that's what you want to need to bring it to my attention, I have no problem with that. And I'm open to, you know, bringing new people and different topics for a variety of things. So it doesn't matter to me what the topic is. If you present it to me and it's something that's comparable to what, you know, we can speak on for the show, I have no problem with honoring your request. Matter of fact, I welcome, you know, any and all suggestions. So if you want to, you know, bring something to my attention, if you want to want me to speak on this, you're willing to be a guest on the show, I have absolutely no problem with doing it. I'll give you the information on how you can reach out to me via telephone. You can text or call me directly. My number is 610-836-2120. That's my business line. You can reach me 24 hours a day. However you want to leave me a message, it's fine. Text message, voicemail, however. I also have a Gmail account, you know, for Religion Means a Lot, specifically for my show and questions or concerns that you want to, you know, get out to me. You can send those to qamrma@gmail.com. So that's Qadira Aisha Muhammad. RMA means Religion Means a Lot. So that's my email address. Or you can inbox me on Facebook or on my Instagram or my Path or my Twitter account. Feel free to, you know, send me a message or a suggestion or anything that you, you know, think is relevant or pertinent to, you know, something that should be addressed on the show. So, you know, in getting into the topic for today, why are African Americans abusing prescription pills? Leading up to this, we had some technological problems with the show for the last couple of days and so forth. So, again, I apologize for that. I know that was going on system-wide, so it wasn't just our show. It was other shows that were on the same network that we utilized. So everybody was having problems. So, again, I appreciate your patience, and I appreciate your support for bearing with us through that time. And we do appreciate you here on Religion Means Alive, me and Imam Alfred Muhammad. We really appreciate all our listeners and the support and the feedback and everything that's been going on. You know, we try to get this out to the people. And we're not just targeting African Americans. We're not just targeting Muslims. We want this information to get out to everyone because, you know, everybody can help us. We're not making this a bias or anything like that. And speaking for myself, the reason why I'm choosing these topics, and people know I'm very cultural. So cultural means that I accept all cultures, all races, all religions. I accept who you are, and I, you know, respect your beliefs. I have no problem with doing it. So the reason why that I'm choosing this particular topic and why I do focus and hone in on African Americans is because that's what I am. I can relate to what I look like. I can relate to what I know I'm going to be treated like by people who see me. People who see me, even if I was of another race, biracial or anything like that, people, and this is just my opinion, and again, this is Quadera's opinion, people treat you what they think you are. They treat you how they think what you are. You know, and, you know, to get off topic just for a second there, you know, I was just watching the nightly news, and they had the tennis star, well, the ex-tennis star who was tackled by the New York Police Department because they thought he looked like this guy that was in this, I guess, mobile phone ring or internet scam, something that was going on, and they tackled him. They didn't walk up to this man and say, you know, we need to talk to you for a second or whatever. I mean, this police officer tackled him. And, you know, watching on the news, come to find out the guy who they said he looked like, you know, he did look like the guy, but even that guy who they questioned, who really was the person they was looking for, really was let go also. Like, he didn't have anything to do with it. And that goes back to my point. You get treated what you look like. He looked African-American, even though he's biracial. He looks African-American. They didn't question him. They didn't walk up to him in a manner that was befitting for another human being to do to another human being. They tackled this man. They tackled him. No questions, no nothing, tackled him. Why? Because he's black. He looks black. Even though he's biracial, he looks black. And, I mean, that goes back to my point. You get treated what you look like. And people could say, oh, no, no, no. People will treat you and stereotype you according to what you look like. And that's just a fact. It's something that's programmed in people to do. I mean, they don't care. They don't care. It's what you look like. So, you know, this is why I choose the topics to, you know, focus on African-Americans. Also, for me, besides African-Americans, the next targeted group that, you know, so much has been done to them are the indigenous Indians, and a lot of people say Native Americans. No, these people, this was their country. This was their country. We were not African Americans, were not brought here on their own free will. They were not brought here because, you know, it's something they wanted to do. We was forcefully brought here and then stripped of all our rights. The indigenous Indians were here. This was their land, and they were stripped of it. They lost all their rights. They were stripped of it. So, you know, these two people, these two cultures, and these two races are the ones that, you know, I can identify with, but I focus on African Americans because that's what I look like. That's what I am. No matter what runs through my blood, I'm going to be treated like a black woman. And that's just a fact. It's nothing that I can do about that. It's nothing I can change about that. It is what it is. And, you know, I have no problem with that. I'm proud of who I am. You know, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, why would I? I only worry about things that I can change, not the things that I can't. So I'm not going to focus on that because it's something I can't change and there's nothing I can do about it. You know, as the old saying goes, I only, you know, got to worry about two things, staying black and paying taxes before I die and dying. So that's three. On the topic of, you know, the prescription pills, you know, I live outside of Philadelphia, and I live in, you know, years ago it was predominantly Caucasian area. There were no black people out here. When I came to Delaware County, I lived in an apartment building not too far from 69th Street Terminal. A lot of people, you know of that apartment complex. And there was hardly any black people that resided up in that area at the time. When I purchased my house, there were only two other that lived on the block. And I chose to move into this area for the reason, I apologize for the background noise, sitting in my bedroom. I chose this area knowing that, of course, I'm going to, you know, incur some hostility from people who don't want me here, didn't want my husband at the time and my children here. They didn't want us here. But I didn't let that stop me because, you know, I work just like you work and I pay taxes just like you pay taxes. and I want my kids to get a quality education and be around people who are different. I didn't want to raise my kids in an area where they went to a school with all kids that looked like them. I wanted my children to be exposed to children of all different races, cultures, ethnicities, and socioeconomic statuses. I wanted my kids to experience that, and they did. And it works out for the better because that's, you know, was the same opportunity that was afforded to me. So I grew up in West Philadelphia, but for junior high school, my mom put me in the desegregation program that was started in Philadelphia back in the late 80s, where they would bus us out to the Northeast to the schools where there were, you know, no black children going to those schools at the time. And it was definitely a great opportunity to do that. I think it prepares you for, you know, different experiences, different things that you're going to experience in life, and also for the workforce. So it's good to be around people that look different and act different than you. So the thing with the prescription drugs is, you know, and I've been seeing a growing number of this. Now, you know, a lot of people were inboxing me and telling me, oh, that's not an African-American problem. It's a white problem. Black people don't, you know, abuse drugs and things like that. So I'm like, oh, I don't know where you're getting that from. You know, I don't know about that. That's not what I see. So, you know, it's not what I see. So, you know, we can't go there with that. So that's something, you know, that we need to definitely take heed to, that we can't categorize these drugs as, oh, only black people do crack. Oh, only white people snort cocaine. Oh, heroin? No, that's only, you know, white people from a certain area, they do that. You know, white people in this area, they don't do that. What we're going to do is we're going to get off of all that, because drugs have no race, have no culture, have no ethnicity, has no socioeconomic status. It can affect any and everyone. It can affect the best of us. It can affect the worst of us. So before I start to get into, you know, all the details surrounding the statistics and different things that I have witnessed, Salat al-Maghrib just came in. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, put on Quran so that, you know, we can go and break for the next 5 to 10 minutes to prepare ourselves for prayer. Inshallah, once I'm done, I'll come back and join the call.
إلا ما يتلى عليكم غير محل الصيد وأنتم حر إن الله يحكم ما يريد يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تحلوا شعائر الله ولا الشهر الحرام ولا الهدي ولا القلائد ولا آمين البيت الحرام يبتغون فضلا من ربهم ورضوانا وإذا حللتم فاصطادوا ولا يجرمنكم شنآن قوم أن صدوكم عن المسجد الحرام أن تعتدوا وتعاونوا على البر والتقوى ولا تعاونوا على الإثم والعدوان واتقوا الله إن الله شديد العقاب حرم
Assalamu alaikum. Okay, so I'm back. And our topic today is in regards to African American abusing prescription drugs. As I've stated before, we broke for Salat al-Maghrib. You know, a lot of people were inboxing me stating that, you know, African Americans don't abuse prescription drugs, but I'm knowing this to be different. I do have a child that has special needs and was on prescription medication, which they considered a controlled substance or a narcotic. With obtaining these prescriptions, there's a little bit more scrutiny when you go get these prescriptions filled and also get refills. There's a whole process. Even when I would go to the pediatrician to obtain the prescription, I had to show my driver's license. They had to have documented that I was the parent, not like the guardian or someone else. Like, no one else in the family could pick it up except for the parent and or the guardians. When you go to the pharmacy, you know, it's not like you're picking up a prescription for, you know, like I have migraines, which I pick up a prescription for those for my migraines. And it's just basically, oh, okay, you know, we have your prescription ready, this and that. You know, now when I was filling my daughter's prescription for her problem, it was, oh, we don't have that prescription. And I'm like, okay, well, when will you be getting that in? Oh, well, we can't tell you when we're getting it in. Okay, so how is my child supposed to, you know, get her medicine? Okay, well, it's already late. Can you call the 24-hour CVS and see if they have it? Oh, we can't call them and ask them, do they have a prescription? You have to go there. And, you know, sometimes a lot of the places, her regular pharmacy, you know, they knew who I was and they knew that this was a regular prescription, but if they were out of the particular medicine that she needed, I had to go to a neighboring pharmacy, CVS pharmacy, to obtain her prescription, and it was a lot of scrutiny that was behind it. You know, when she first was on this medicine, I never encountered that problem. So after, you know, several, you know, years, the process became very stringent. It wasn't easy to, you know, obtain this prescription. It was a process, and this wasn't the case before. So, you know, the one pharmacy that I would always frequent, I would ask them, you know, like, what's going on here? Like, I mean, I'm just asking a simple question about her prescription. And they're like, oh, you know, well, we can't, it's considered a narcotic and a controlled substance. We can't provide that information or the information on whether or not we have it available and things like that, because people are starting to rob the pharmacies. And because I live right outside of Philadelphia, a lot of people from the city was coming out to my county to rob the pharmacies to obtain these particular drugs. Now, it may not have been the particular drug that my daughter was on, but any of these medications that they use for anything that will get you high, that will stimulate, you know, the neurological system, is what people are after. So any of the ADHD drugs, ADD, ODD, any of those type drugs that will calm you or take the edge off, you know, you feel that floating type of feeling when you take these drugs, that's what people are after, because they're trying to mask their problems. You know, when people are upset and going through different life-altering issues and problems in their life, they want to not face the problem. They want to mask the problem. And with these drugs is, they're just like any other. If they were illegal, instead of prescription, they're only going to mask it for so long. You're only going to feel that euphoria for so long. Those drugs wear off. You have to get more. What people don't understand with these particular type drugs is they mess with your endorphins. And when you start to mess with your endorphins, you're messing with something that's a bigger monster than what you really think you were involved in when you started using these drugs. When you mess with the endorphins, what happens is drugs like heroin, morphine, things, all those type of drugs, those OxyContin, Xanax, Vicodin, Perks, all that. What happens is your body becomes so dependent on these drugs that once the high wears off, you start to get sick. And why is that? It's because these are drugs that mess with your endorphins. We produce naturally endorphins in our brain. You know, our body chemically produces it. When you get excited or you're in a crisis situation, like it's a fight or flight, your endorphins pump so high. That's why, like, people can get shot and run for blocks and not know that they've been shot because the adrenaline is pumping and the endorphins have kicked in. Like, they are in this survival mode, so your endorphins kick in. What happens when you start to abuse these drugs is your endorphins no longer produce, or they produce at very low levels. And what happens with that is these drugs then take the place of that drug, of your naturally body-producing drug, which is the endorphin. And when you don't take that drug, you get into a severe bout of depression. You get sick, you get nauseous, you get angry, you get violent. There's all kinds of things that happen to your body, your chemical makeup in your body, because you're abusing these prescription drugs. Just because it's prescription drugs doesn't make it any better than crack, heroin, cocaine, opium, whatever you was using. It's meth. It doesn't substitute it because you got a prescription for it. And that's, if you're using any prescription drug for other than what it was prescribed for at the dose that it was prescribed for, then you're abusing prescription drugs, plain and simple, point blank. That's it. I'm not going to argue with nobody about it. I'm not going to debate with nobody about it. If you take over the amount that is prescribed by your doctor, you're abusing prescription drugs. Now, the thing with why people thought it was this Caucasian problem is because their kids were the ones that were on these ADHD and these ODD and ADD medicine, Ritalin and all that type, all those type drugs. So our kids, African-American kids, weren't diagnosed with this stuff. They wasn't giving our kids this stuff back in the day. You got to behind with. Plain and simple, you got ants in your pants, you're nervous. You know, teachers took time to sit down with these kids. And a lot of people I know, even including myself, probably have a touch of ADD or have anxiety. But we didn't receive drugs for it. We got beat. We got punished. We got time taken with us to figure out what was wrong with us as far as resolving our problems and stuff in school and things like that at home. Nowadays, all they want to do is they don't want to deal with kids, they don't want to deal with the issues, they don't want to deal with the problems, so they started pumping these kids with these drugs. Also, you know, and I'm focusing on more of those type drugs than the Xanax, the OxyContin, the Perks, and the Vicodin. And I'll talk on those later, but because I'm focusing on these drugs, this is where the abuse started with the pills. It started with these drugs that were used for children, needed to be used for children to maintain their stability in classrooms. Okay, so the parents seen how the kids act when they were on it. Hey, let me take some. And they liked the feeling that they were getting. So now they stopped giving their children their pills and started giving them, taking them themselves. Now, with the pain medication, you got a lot of people who are elderly, you know, have rheumatoid arthritis and other chronic back pains, like, you know, bulging discs and so forth. So you have these people who get, you know, prescriptions for them. And a lot of people start, elderly people sell their prescriptions because they need to make ends meet. Food stamps, Social Security does not cut it. They're raising real estate taxes, so you have to pay more money a year. You have to pay, you know, various taxes. You got to have insurance on your home, things like that. You got to pay insurance for your car. And, you know, people are living longer now, so, you know, elderly people need to find a means to make ends meet. They start selling their drugs, their prescriptions, to make ends meet. This is how it all leads up. Okay, so Caucasian people was doing it first. And, you know, we're like, hey, they doing it. We need to start doing it. They making good money off of it. You could charge $5 to $10 a pill. If I sell my whole bottle, that's almost $300 extra I can get a month. And if you're elderly, you could call in your doctor and say, hey, I misplaced that prescription. Or, you know, I knocked over the bottle and I lost about 20 pills. Can you get me a refill? They did came up another $150. One thing about the county is we charge less than what the city charged for pills, so we have an influx of people from Philadelphia coming out here to Delaware County. Now, you may say why I said we, because I personally know about certain situations that go on. And that's, it is what it is. People need to eat. They're cutting different things out of people's normal household budget, and people got to make ends meet. So I don't knock nobody hustle. You do what you got to do. Yes, it's haram. It's not legal to do. That's dumb. I don't do it. I don't condone it. So that's me. It's becoming popular. People don't want to go around saying they smoking crack. People don't want to say, oh, I'm shooting meth. I'm shooting heroin. I snort coke. It's more popular and convenient to say, I pop pills. It's the end thing to do. It's not as stigmatized. Oh, ain't nobody cooking nothing on no stove and putting in no bag and I'm, you know, passing it, handing off on the corner somewhere. I'm not smoking crack. But you're killing yourself. If you want to walk around in a stupor all day long, can't function, drooling, and y'all know what I mean by dipping, sitting there, and can't focus, can't maintain yourself, and you're crashing cars, you're getting into accidents, you're burning down homes, you're doing all kinds of stuff, you're sleeping half your life away, because you don't want to face your problems. Now, there are 41.7% African Americans in the U.S. That's about 14% of the population. Okay. Blacks will more likely be convicted for selling drugs than whites. And we're talking about heroin, coke, crack, whatever have you. That's whatever's popular as far as the illicit drugs. Black people will be convicted of that more. Now, who's selling more prescription drugs? that is Caucasian. But they won't be convicted of those crimes on a nearly as high of a number as African Americans. Now, it states in these statistics that blacks are less likely to develop substance abuse problems than whites. And this is partly true because we can't afford it. That's part of the reason. We can't afford it. So we can't get high. We can't snort coke. We can't, you know, smoke, you know, do heroin and stuff like that. These are drugs that take up a lot of money. But if your kid needs that Ritalin, if your kid needs that Focalin, if your kid needs whatever drug they're on, and you can cut that in half and sell half of that, black people going to do it. They're going to do it wherever they can make money at. So that's why those numbers, the influx of the numbers is a little bit off, because, you know, I'm like, this is, you know, different. The numbers are varying, very varying. From a survey that Time Magazine did on 72,561 youth, about 37% of ages between the age of 12 and 17 use alcohol or other drugs at least once in the past year. Nearly 8% met the criteria of substance abuse or dependency. That number is alarming. Because also with statistics, it states that if you have not smoked or drank alcohol products before the age of 18, most likely you won't develop a substance abuse problem or alcohol problem. And that's because that either you were severely influenced by your peers or you had parents that were abusing drugs. And if anybody remembers when I said, you know, the roles and responsibilities of a parent is to practice what you preach, because your children mimic you. Children know that, yeah, you know, my parent uses drugs. Kids aren't slow. Kids are very intelligent. At an early age, they are very intelligent, and they mimic what they see. So if they see a parent that's abusing drugs, they're more likely, 9 times out of 10, will abuse drugs themselves at an early age. You have to start experimenting at an early age to then, once you're in your early 20s and 25 and so forth, you're heavily using by that time. Like, you just didn't start using, like, okay, I'm 18, I'm going to start smoking crack. No, you've been experimenting with other drugs. Now, what I said earlier about the indigenous Indians is that they fared worse than African Americans did with drug abuse. And, I mean, this is a known fact as far as them consuming alcohol. Like, their genetic makeup, they just can't control alcohol. They can't do it. They fare the worst with alcohol abuse and drugs, becoming addicted to drugs of any kind, period. They have a higher rate than African Americans. Now, the thing from that survey with Time did, most are able to recover on their own without treatment. And then that lowered the number from 37% to a total substance abuse about 23%. Of course, everyone knows marijuana is the top abused drug. Prescription drugs have the highest rate of usage between the ages 18 and 25. 60.5% in their lifetime have tried drugs. 34.6% within the last year, 20.3% within the last month, and 38.2% within the ages of 18 to 25 was within the last year, and 30.6% of African Americans used marijuana within the last year. Now, that's based on the total population. Every day, 2,512 to 17-year-olds abuse prescription drugs. 15 million Americans this year is more than it's wait, Americans make up 15 million of those who reported using cocaine, hallucinogens, inhalants, and heroin. Prescriptions cause the largest number of overdoses. So we're not talking crack. We're not talking heroin, which a lot of people think, you know, if you shoot heroin or you shoot meth, that you're going to overdose. Actually, prescription drugs have the highest number. If every day, 22,400 people abuse opiate painkillers, just opiates alone. 45% of that comes from prescription. And the other percentage comes from illegal obtainment from the street, like under the table, black market, however you want to look at it. Now, what I want to do is bring in the Islamic perspective on this. We know that any intoxicant, and for those of you who are not Muslim, don't understand what I'm about to speak of, when we make our five prayers for the day, we have to have a clear mind. Like, we cannot be sleepy. We cannot be hungry. We cannot be under the influence of any type of drug or alcohol. So marijuana, drinking, alcohol, even prescription drugs, over-the-counter drugs. If your mind is foggy, you cannot perform Salat. You have to have a clear mind in order to speak to Allah through your prayer. You have to be able to understand what you're reciting and why you're reciting it. You have to remember the motions and the various movements that you do throughout the process of Salat. You have to understand why you're doing it, how you're doing it, and making sure that you're doing it correctly. Anything that I stated that, you know, you don't do could nullify your Salat. So it's very important that you have a clear, concise mind, that you understand what you're doing, that you can comprehend what you're doing, and that you do it correctly. So I pulled this from IslamicFact.com. A lot of people use this to, you know, find out various rulings with the proper dalil, which means the proper facts supporting the claim that you're stating. Now, it says, if it dulls the senses and befogs the mind, and whatever does that is haram, because the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, every intoxicant is a kama, and every intoxicant is haram. Whoever drinks kama is in this world and dies persisting in that and without having repented will not drink in the hereafter. And that's related in Muslim 2003. It's also in Al-Bukhari 4087. Also in Muslim 1773, every intoxicant is haram. So if you're abusing drugs, I don't care whether they're prescription, over-the-counter, you're drinking alcohol, all of this nullifies your Salat. You can make Salat, and you're required to make Salat, but your Salat is not valid for 40 days, time that you take that particular drug 40 days after. You still have to pray. You still have to pray. You don't get off, okay, I took those perks and, you know, I can't pray for 40 days. No, you still have to pray. You know, so it's something that I'm seeing on a regular in the African-American community and it's concerning me. It's becoming a greater issue within the community. And it's something that we need to focus on. You know, I've seen some memes out there on Instagram and also Facebook where it said, you know, if oxycodone was popular back in the 80s, you would be called the crackhead. So it's not just me that's noticing that African Americans are abusing these prescription drugs on a higher rate than, you know, that succeeding other races. It's gaining momentum. It's growing. It's an issue. If you know, and it's popular among the teenagers, and it's popular among people who are in their 20s. So 25 to 12, yeah, that's about right. That's who we should be looking at. So parents, pay attention to your kids' behavior. Pay attention to their speech patterns, if they're slurring, if you see them, like, nodding off, they can't keep focus, they look jittery all the time, they look like they're panicking. You know, same thing with regular drugs. You're going to get the same kind of effects if they were using crack, cocaine, meth. You're going to see a change in their behavior. You're going to see a difference in their mood. So, you know, parents, pay attention to this. And, you know, as Muslims, you know, we should be encouraging and uplifting one another in regards to, you know, substance abuse. I mean, seriously, we really need to take it serious. It's not, you can't use prescription drugs and say, oh, you know, it's not illegal, so I can use it. No, it's haram. It's haram. Like, no sugarcoating it. It's haram. Same way if you were smoking marijuana, it's haram. Y'all can say what y'all want to say. Y'all can feel what y'all want to feel, but we all know it's haram. Don't make excuses for, oh, I smoke weed, but I don't drink. It's haram. Unless you have a medical condition. And I'm talking about a serious medical condition where you could get, you know, prescription marijuana. But you use it for that medical purpose, and you're not using it above and beyond what is prescribed for you. Because we know people who have seizures, people who have glaucoma, other people who have, you know, various types of cancer, they do provide them with a prescription for marijuana to ease those pains and so forth that they're experiencing. You know, may Allah make it easy on those who are suffering from legitimate ailments, that they overcome those ailments and are restored to proper health that they were, as I would say, better than what they were in before they incurred those ailments. We just have to stay focused. We have to stay diligent on this. I mean, you can't be on a straight path and high. I mean, you gotta want to have some clarity in your mind at some point in time. You know, like I said, I worry about the things that I can control. The things I can't control, I leave them wherever. I give it to Allah. I take it to the rug. I don't have time to deal with that. Stress will kill you. Worrying about what other people are doing will kill you. You have a problem, you have an issue, take it to Allah. Allah is the best at resolving our issues. Nobody else can intercede for us to handle our issues except for Allah. That's it. When people abuse drugs, they abuse them because they're, again, as I said earlier, they're trying to mask something. Something is eating at them. Something is bothering them. Something that they're trying to do, they can't obtain, so they turn to these drugs as a way of comfort. Who is the greatest comforter? Allah is. Again, these drugs will only mask that problem. It will not resolve their problem. And I'm speaking to the people who are 20 and above, who are no longer under their parents' care. Get help. Get help. Get professional help with your issue. Don't continue to abuse drugs. Don't die in that state. I mean, I don't think anybody would want to die from overdosing from a drug, and you have to stand before Allah Azza wa Jalla on the day of judgment, and you were getting high. So, inshallah, we take that under consideration, that no problem is bigger than what Allah can solve. We don't know the gist of what Allah can solve. So don't think your problem is greater than what Allah can solve. This is why we forbid suicide and all that other stuff, because we need to take it to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for him to handle and not handle it on our own. There are plenty of programs out there for Muslims who have substance abuse problems. We don't do the NA because we're not revealing our sins on what we used to do and how we did it and why we did it. We don't do that in Islam. You seek out somebody who, you know, can handle your issue on an Islamic level. They're professional, they're, you know, accredited and so forth, but they're Muslim. We need to address this. Parents, keep a diligent eye out on your children. Monitor their behavior. For me, in my home, there's no secrets. You couldn't hide nothing. I can go in your room. I can go through your drawers. I can go through your closet, whatever have you, because it's my home, and I have that right over my children. Parents, do some searching in your kids' room. Look through their things. If you see some off-pattern behaviors, make sure you speak to your kids about it. Monitor who your children's friends are and who your children's friends' parents are. You know, just don't let your kids be hanging out with any and everybody. I don't care if they're Muslim or not. Make sure you get to know their parents. Know who their parents are and what kind of relationship their parents have with their own children. It's important because your children could be adversely affected or influenced by the behavior of their friends. You know, it's incumbent upon us to advise others, especially Muslims, about, you know, what we want them to do as far as keeping them on the straight and narrow. You know, we can advise you. We can't force you. We can advise you and pray that you adhere and listen to what people are trying to tell you. This is my personal opinion. I don't want to see none of my brothers and sisters in Islam in a drunken stupor, in a high dipping state. I don't want to see my brothers and sisters like that. I don't want to see you spending your money on things that you don't have to spend your money on when you could be providing for your family. These drugs aren't cheap. They're expensive. But they're getting a different kind of high, and it's being glamorized by society that, hey, it's not crack, it's not cocaine, it's not meth, you know, we're not creating in the lab. You can go ahead and do it and it'd be cool. No, it's not cool. It's haram. So, you know, that concludes tonight's topic of, you know, why are African Americans abusing drugs and not prescription drugs? And like again, I say, I see it becoming more readily acceptable and a practice amongst African Americans, and it's something that we need to pay attention to because we already got enough strikes against us. We already got enough things going on, things that's happening in society where we're getting sidetracked on what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. We don't need this roadblock to continue to block us.
pay attention to your spouse, to your children, to your brothers and sisters, you know, your aunts, uncles, anybody that you see, just have a talk with them and, you know, urge them to get off that stuff. Leave it alone. Because it's going to cause ultimate problems. I don't know if people know, one fact is when you're on those drugs, they affect your heart. You have a more likely having a stroke or a heart attack if you were on those drugs, like for ADHD, ODD, ADD, and all those kind of drugs. They affect your heart. So, you know, again, we wanna make do it. We wanna, you know, advise, you know, our loved ones to stay away from this stuff. It's not for us. It's not something that nobody should be doing, and especially Muslims, because you guys know, you know what should be done and what shouldn't be done. You know, we're not going to play this game like y'all, I know that. Yeah, you knew. So, you know, I'm going to leave it at that. May Allah forgive me for anything that I said in error. And I pray that this reaches people who feel as though that they don't have somewhere to turn. Again, if you want to reach me, if you want to reach out to me, and I tell anybody this, whatever you say to me in confidence stays with me in confidence. I do not reveal who you are, where you're located at. If someone comes to me and tells me something, I don't reveal who that person was. Now, I may use that scenario, you know, to promote awareness to that particular topic or subject, but I will never reveal that such and such told me this or such and such told me that. We don't do that. If you need resources, I have contacts for different various resources that could put you in the right direction with getting help with substance abuse or alcohol abuse and so forth. You know, I don't want to see my brothers and sisters in Islam continuing down this path. I want to be reunited with everybody that I've come in contact with in my lifetime in Jannah, inshallah. I want everybody to obtain that. So, you know, we got to become aware and we got to start focusing and paying attention to what's going on in our own backyards, in our own homes. And we have to make sure that we stay on our loved ones and our children especially, that they don't get caught up in these different, and these, we just got to pray on it and make sure that they don't get caught up to the best of our abilities. So on that note, for Religion Means Alive for today, which is September the 10th, 2015, I am Qadira Aisha Muhammad, and I am signing off, inshallah, Saturday at 7, again, same bat channel, same bat station. We will be talking about death. I know nobody wants to talk about death. We try to avoid it, but I'm going to have a couple of people on the show. I'm trying to line that up now to be able to call in and talk about the various resources that are available in the Philadelphia area for performing a janazah. And I have some additional information that I can provide to people, and I will do all that on the call Saturday, inshallah. So if you want to, you know, tune in, please do so, inshallah, because that it's something we don't want to talk about, but every soul shall taste death, every last one of them, every last one of them. We don't know when, how, or where. We know that we will die, and we will of the grave until the day of judgment. So if you want to, you know, tune in Saturday, inshallah, feel free to, and I'll have the additional information then. Thank you so much for listening in to Religion Means Alive, Why African Americans Abuse Prescription Drugs at a Higher Rate in This Current Time. Thank you and good night. Assalamu alaikum.